Welcome to the Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Josiah Smelser. The Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast is the shared journey of building a real estate investment property business from square one. Join me as we learn together how to conquer the real estate game to reach financial freedom. Together, we will learn from people in all areas of real estate and business in our personal trek towards escaping the rat race. Be you. Do the work you love. Play the long game. Before we get going, make sure you're subscribed to the show on whatever audio platform you're using and jump over on YouTube and subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Daily Real Estate Investor. We have shorts coming out daily as well as these podcast episodes on video. What's up, folks? Welcome to this is our new format.
I guess so. It's
Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast. We're using some new angles here. Got my mic up. Tony's got his setup going. He's the mastermind behind this setup here.
Hey, we'll give it a shot. We'll see how it's looking.
Yeah, exactly.
So today, really, I mean, I just wanted to sit down. We actually had an interview scheduled today, but I guess the person canceled, didn't show up. But here we are. Hey, we are faithful enough to make an episode.
That's right.
So look, I'll break the ice, and well, first of all, what's going on in your life? What's going on? How you doing?
Doing good. Things are good. Just dealing with vacation rental cabins out the wazoo.
So talk to me about that. What's happening there?
Oh, man. Helping a lot of clients make offers on cabins. Getting a lot of phone calls about people wanting to know, how do I get into vacation rental investing? And trying to walk them through the process of where you look for a property, what you're going for as far as cash on cash return, and how to optimize a property for cash flow. You know, a lot of people want to know how to get their first deal done. And so I'm sharing with them the second home loan option that you can use to buy a vacation rental. And it's totally above board. The lenders allow it. So just stuff like that.
So these are non-investors for the most part. Like
most of these people are first time investors, believe it or not. Okay. Like they own their house.
Yep.
But they're wanting to get into vacation rentals and they don't know where to start.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And let's talk about that that bank program that lets you get a second home.
Yeah.
What is it, 10% down instead of a
regular? Yeah, second home loan, 10% down.
Talk to me about that. How does that?
Yeah.
For those that don't know.
It's called a second home loan, 10% down. And I think the rates are typically a little lower than the investment property loans are.
Okay, yep.
But it's a really great way for people to get started. Now, you do have to get pre-qualified, but it is a conventional loan, 30-year fixed, locked rate. And so, you know, it just allows you to have a lot less capital and, you know, to put down on your first deal.
And that's a really good strategy for trying to get started, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, I mean, it's a fixed rate loan, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys see what commercial is going through right now. And a big part of it is because of the adjustable rates that they get every 5 to 10 years, whatever that is. So if you get a 30-year fix, for any new investors out there, that is a really good option for you to get your investment started. Now, I know for a fact that it has to be within, what, like 100 miles or something? Or not? Is it mileage? I think
it's... You know, there's some rule about you can buy... This is what I was told, okay? Double check this. Don't go off just this. But you can own a vacation rental on a second home loan. You can only own one in each market.
Okay.
Check on that.
No, I think it's true.
Yeah.
I read it in, I can't remember whose book it is.
Yeah.
But Avery Carl is the author. Long-term rental, short-term wealth. Or Packers, short-term rental, long-term wealth.
Gotcha.
And on there, I think it was either.
Short-term wealth, long-term rental. I've been there, done that. I got out of that game, baby. No.
but I believe in there it said it needs to be within like 500 miles, I think it was. And it has to be, like you said, you could only do one in one market, a secondary home. But yeah, I mean, imagine us. We're in North Alabama, you know, South or North Florida. South Beach to us is about 5 hours. I think it's about 300 miles.
Yeah.
So if you're within a vacation area in Gatlinburg area too, you know, the Smoky Mountains is what is that, 300 miles from us?
It's a 5-hour drive from here, something like that.
Okay, so it's within, I want to say it's within the scope of what the banks allow us to do.
Yeah.
So if you're in a position like that, if you're near a vacation rental that's within a couple hours from you, you could actually look into this this banking app, this lending option from banks.
Yeah.
So that's good to hear, man. That's good to hear. So you got that going on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get a lot of people still make the step to invest, or are you getting a lot of
You know, it's a tough market right now. The, you know, rates are high. So the last rate I saw on a vacation rental cabin was 7.5%. So the vacation rental market in the Smokies, I'm just talking about that market. I'm not talking about these others. It's you know, I think this is going on everywhere, but a lot of the owners are locked in at low rates. They have a, 4% interest rate or 3.5% interest rate on their cabin. And the thing is cash flowing. There's been a lot of new building that's come online. So rents are under pressure. Not rents, but more occupancy. Mm. Rents are about the same, but occupancy is under pressure. So 2021 was just an absolute boom year. It was a record high for occupancy and rents. And you also had inflation going way up. So it makes sense that rents would be higher, right?
Right.
But 2022, I would say occupancy was down a little bit. Rents were about the same, and if you managed, you could do things to help yourself. Like, we actually made more money in 2022 than 2021. We also added a property, and we also optimized the properties we had by, fixing things up, replacing a few things that were older, taking better pictures. You can optimize your property by doing things like that to help you out. But if you took the same property and you had it in the same location, 2021 versus 2022, 2022 has been down a little bit as far as occupancy. So revenues just a tad lower. Nothing to be alarmed about at all.
So is it that people are not traveling over there as much right now?
No, I think it's that. I think it, actually when you get the AirDNA reports, people are actually traveling more. There's more vacation rental revenue right now than it's historical high. The problem is there's new supply coming online.
I got you.
So, if you add 1,000 new properties and you spread out, even increased traffic, you could see a tiny little dip.
Yeah.
The good news is for people that are looking at buying existing stuff or that own existing stuff, with rates as high as they are right now, I don't think people are going to be so gung-ho about building new cabins as they were in 2020. This stuff takes a while to build. So even in 2021, those may come through next year or this year. But I don't see a lot of people starting new cabins in 2023. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Is there even space up there to do that? I mean,
there's space, but I always try to help my clients find stuff as close in to all the attractions as possible. And a lot of that land's already built out.
Yeah.
So you have a competitive advantage when you own stuff that is well located, that doesn't have vacant land around it, because somebody can go build 15, 20 miles outside of town. But most people, when they search for a place to stay, they want to be close to where they're going.
Yeah.
So it's harder to rent that stuff outside of town, even though it's newer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's competition, but it's not really offering quite the same thing.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, cool deal, man.
Yeah. So tell me about your mobile home park. Do you call it a mobile home park, or do you call it a
mobile home community?
Mobile home community.
You got to say community.
Mobile home community.
I made a post the other day. A lot of people call it trailer park, and trailer park has a bad tone to it.
Yeah.
Some people think of trailer trash,
Right.
Trailers that are like completely abandoned.
Right.
So that's why I always like to say it's a mobile home community. Because right now, the mobile homes being built, I took a video the other day because we staged one of them. That place looks better than my personal home. It looks like.
No, I'm concerned about your personal home, Tony.
don't let my wife know this. But the way these are built now, they are up to like really high standards to what you see in new builds.
Yeah.
So mobile home community is a new name that needs to go out there for the new homes that are being built.
Yeah.
The new mobile homes that are being built. But we got three on site right now, and those three are going to be the ones, like I talked to you before, just to show people. Now, right now we got that area. We're getting that area ready to where we're going to have a kind of like an open house.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about getting a food truck out there so we can have like a big crowd over there.
Yeah.
And obviously the marketing, we're going to throw ads out there.
Yeah.
for people to come and see the model homes and,
yeah,
and get some interest, get some traction going.
Cool.
There is the, we're having, so I talked to you about this a couple minutes ago. We have we're in a non-zoning area, so we can do whatever we want. However, if we want utilities, electrical, those people are still folks that you have to be involved in working with,
yeah,
in order to get the mobile home park. So, like I said, trailer park has a bad tone to it. And the folks around this area, that's what they think we're going to bring, which is not. I mean, if you see what our mobile homes look like versus the other ones around it, it's bad. It's,
yeah,
really, it's a complete different thing. So in a sense, they're kind of concerned because they think it's going to be trashy people that are going to be moving into, yeah, this community. And, you know, who wouldn't be? Like,
yeah,
if you live in that area, you don't want, you know, trashy people,
right,
or people who have a bad reputation with the authorities and stuff like that. So I don't blame them, but they are not looking at the big picture of what we're trying to bring here.
Right.
So the one we're dealing with right now, and this is the headache that I had yesterday. It's like yesterday, honestly, my day started horribly. Let me not say that. I start with prayer. I start with, you know, my reading and everything. So it started great. But after that, man, I got a call from, it was a technician that from the water utility company. They're very local, very small. And they have a board meeting every second Tuesday of the month or something like that. And he called me and told me bad news. Let me back up. Back in February, they gave us two options with the mobile home park. We could either go public utility with a 6-inch pipe, and each mobile home will have their own individual meter. But that would require us to do the roads to the public standards, which I spoke to before, you know, basically making, giving them the easement, throwing asphalt and whatever, go the whole nine yards. The other option was treat it like if it was an apartment building, where you have one master meter, and that master meter that's on the county, I guess on the road that's there now, from there, you would feed all the mobile homes that are in the park. So they gave us those two options back in February. Fast forward to now, today's June 15th, I think it is today. June 15th, I went back and told them, hey, we're going to look into option two. And the board apparently said no to option two. And in my head, I'm like, it shouldn't have even been a vote. You already gave us these two options.
Mm-hmm.
So was it even up to a vote? We were just letting, that's one thing. Like when you try to work with utilities and do things the right way, sometimes it just bites you.
Mm-hmm.
Cause a lot of the folks out there, they're doing it anyways and not even telling the water utility people. And here we are, you know, trying to do things the right way, trying to communicate properly with people. And now we got this going on. So We're gonna do two things, and this episode's not gonna air tomorrow, so I can still do it. They might go back and watch this, but we're gonna do two things. Number one, we're gonna go over there because it's about an hour drive from us. We're gonna go over there. They take meeting minutes in this board meetings, and I know for a fact that they gave us the two options approved over there back then. And hopefully we'll find that in the meeting minutes and go back to them and say, hey, you actually did approve it. And then number two, we're still going to move forward regardless with option one if they give us a headache with option two. But anyway, it was frustrating yesterday having that conversation because they were complete a-holes yesterday when I was speaking to them. I was trying to maintain my cool, because that's the thing, like you don't want to, you're in a professional manner. So I was like, the dude was literally like yelling at me over the phone. I kid you not. And I was just trying to maintain my cool. I'm like, his name is Kenny. I'm like, Kenny, like, I'm not trying to argue with you. I'm just literally just saying again what you told me back in February. And he was like, no, I didn't say that. He was just going. Anyways, but yeah, man, yesterday I had to pray, man, because it was tough. It was tough mentally to hear that guy over the phone. But anyways, that's where we're at now. But regardless, we're going to move forward. It's just going to be a high dollar item if we go with option one. But it is what it is. Returns still look promising. So yeah, man, That's what I got going on right now, dude.
I love it. I love it. So if you go with option one, and I mean, here's the good news. You have option one, mm-hmm. right? If you couldn't have option two and you didn't have option one, your deal sunk, right?
Yeah.
So at least you have option one on the table.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least I'm not saying you can't do this at all, right? So obviously this is a unfortunate mm-hmm. development for you. Hopefully they can still work out option two.
Yeah.
But if they can't, you can still go forward with option one. And this brings me to this point.
Mm-hmm.
This is real estate investing, right? You do anything entrepreneurial, it never goes like you plan it to.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. Like I couldn't even begin to tell you all the problems we've had with everything we've done with real estate. Like it's a never ending list. You know what I mean? But it's that quality in an entrepreneur that if you are willing to figure it out and roll with the punches, sometimes you got to just keep going after option number two
mm-hmm.
until you figure it out. Sometimes you got to take option number one, you know, but a common thread that I know everyone experiences in real estate is there are difficult people you got to deal with. Sometimes people don't want to do their job. I'm not saying that Kenny's doing that, but sometimes people don't want to do their job. Sometimes people make mistakes and it's a negative thing for you and it's not even your fault.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you make a mistake, right? Sometimes no one makes a mistake and it's just bad luck. But this is life, you know? I mean, there are positive things that go on as well, but man, I mean, when I was doing all the flips out in Texas, mm-hmm. long distance flipping houses, we had 10 flips going when COVID happened.
Dang.
We had just purchased them all. I had just worked myself up to doing 10 at a time. So we just had 10 all running on hard money. We had just started a couple of them. Like the other eight were waiting in the wings for, you know, for us to get going. The contractors were lined up.
Mm-hmm.
COVID happens. They shut down everything. They shut down the schools. The markets pretty much shut down. Everyone thought that the entire United States was going into financial ruin overnight. That was what was being said then.
Mm-hmm.
We all know how it worked out now. But it went overnight. No one wanted to lend money anymore.
Mm.
So my private money guy called me wanting his money back. And we had it deployed into all the properties. Yeah. And I was telling him, it's going to take a second for me to get your money back. It's in the properties. We've always paid you on time. We always will. But, you know, this is where we are. We got to sell the property to get the money back. So we had that pressure. Then we had the problem of the contractors wouldn't even come out to work mm-hmm. because everybody was in their house,
mm-hmm.
you know. Then we had the problem of once we actually got the contractors to come out and got the property finished, we put it up for sale, everyone's terrified that the housing market's going to crash. So the people buying the properties were scared that if they bought it, they were going to lose their job and they're going to go into foreclosure and they wouldn't be able to sell it.
Yeah.
So the same property went under contract three times and fell through three times. 3 months of us sitting there making payments. The thing should have already been sold in a normal market. And we got 10 of these. So we said, okay, we're going to have to go to plan B. Plan A didn't work. Plan B, we got to rent all these things out.
Mm.
So we put them up for rent. We got long-term tenants in there. They all cash flowed because we covered our numbers on the front end. That was our plan B if mm-hmm. our flips wouldn't work. So we rented all these things out. Fortunately, people wanted to be in a house at that point. So whereas we couldn't sell them, it was easy to rent them because
yeah.
people wanted to get out of apartments at that point. They didn't want to live next door to somebody that could have a deadly virus that could kill them, right? That's just how people were thinking then, okay? So all these things got rented out. We refinanced them somehow. I couldn't find anybody doing loans, and I found one loan officer that said he could do it all. He refinanced them all. It was like still like the greatest Houdini act ever. Paid the private money guy back, so he was happy. Got all his money back. We got all these things refinanced out, got most of our capital back. We had to leave some capital in there. That was stressful as well, mm-hmm. putting capital in something you weren't planning on. But all of them were cash flowing. So all of a sudden, we went from crisis to we're in a good position now.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell that story to basically get across this point. Like I could have never in a million years predicted that we would have COVID happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it would make it where I can't sell a property and I can't get people to come out to work. And my hard money guy wants his money back 10 months before it's due. But that's life.
That's
right?
Life. Yeah, that's one thing. When you become a real estate investor, I always say you become a problem solver.
Yep.
Because stuff is going to come up all the time. And again, like you said, you got to put your
yep.
thinking cap on and take action, fix it, you know, do whatever you got to do. Not give up. I mean, there's a lot of investors out there that started and they just stopped.
Yep.
Whether it was with their first property or whatever. No, from every problem, it's a lesson learned.
Yep.
And then another thing too that reminded me when you were talking, I think it was an interview with Felipe Mejia that used to be in Bigger Pockets. He said one thing that stuck with me when I first started investing. And it was like, when somebody tells you no, always ask why.
Mm.
And if they give you that answer, it still doesn't make sense. Why? You just keep going with the whys, and you would actually get to a point where you figure out the solution just asking why. Like, for example, if I tell you, hey, you can't build a property here. Okay, why?
Yeah.
Because it needs to be, it's zoned for a three-bedroom house instead of a, I'm just making stuff up.
Yeah.
Three-bedroom house instead of a two-bedroom house. I'm like, okay, there you go. I just built.
Yeah.
I just need to build. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
The solution is there for the most part if you just get to the root of the problem.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I like that.
So let me transition into this here. You're a religious guy. Like I always say, I'm a religious guy. You know, for us landlords, do you still have rentals, by the way? Long-term rentals or all short-term cash?
All short-term, baby.
Okay, when you
got rid of all this. Wait. But I mean, I think long-term rental is great. Mm-hmm. I just for me, the reason I got out of it, and then I want to hear the rest of your question.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I got, there was a reason for getting out of it. It wasn't that I just don't like them. We loved them. But what we found was we did the BRRRR strategy. I would say maybe a fourth of the time we're getting all our money back.
Mm.
I would say probably maybe 60% of the time we were leaving like $5,000 in there.
Mm.
And then the rest was 10 to 15 grand, you know, because an appraisal comes in low or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
So we found like we were able to take, you know, buy millions of dollars worth of properties, build our portfolio with great rental properties. And these things were cash flowing, but we would have these big ticket things go out and it was happening constantly. Even though we went in there and renovated the thing up front, mm-hmm. it's like a gas line would bust. And we bought a lot of our stuff in similar areas and they were like that 1970s, 1980s.
Yep, yep.
The gas lines were just, the piping was corroded and falling apart. And the city said, well, it's on your property, you got to fix it.
Mm.
So this was happening on like almost every one of our properties, almost every month. That's like $4,000 or $5,000.
Man.
So if you got $200 a door profit per month, you're looking at $2,400 profit a year per property. And you got a $5,000, $3,000 repair happening. So we figured out like this is a great retirement plan for us, but the cash flow is not what we thought it was going to be. It wasn't even high to begin with. Even at $2,400 a property, you got 20 properties. That's like $48,000 a year,
mm-hmm.
right? Something like that. But when we sold those and moved into vacation rentals, we went from, you know, $48,000, $50,000 a year to like $500,000 a year.
Yeah.
Just moving that money over. And we created a ton of value for ourselves.
Right.
So it wasn't just, I don't like it. I think it's a wonderful place for people to start. It's a wonderful thing to hold on to indefinitely. Like you will become a millionaire if you get yourself a handful of single families and you hang on to them for 30 years.
And that's one thing too, like me, most of my portfolio right now is single family long-term rentals.
Yes.
And my vision is not to keep these forever.
Right.
The best way for you to become a millionaire in real estate is you buy these houses and then in the future you can 1031 those into an apartment
company. Which is exactly what we did.
Exactly. Yep. So that's just a start for you to grow your wealth.
Yep.
Some people are able to keep those forever and that'll be their retirement.
Right.
Great. I mean, that's still pretty good.
Yeah.
But me personally, I don't want to be dealing with tenants my whole life.
Yeah, exactly.
Eventually, the goal is to get to, I mean, as we already know, get to a bigger multifamily and we just either manage the assets or just manage the company and have people run the assets.
We manage the manager.
Manage the managers, exactly. But
we're the assistants to the regional manager.
Exactly. And that's another topic we'll touch later on outsourcing and VA. So we'll talk a little bit. Anywho, so my question is, you know, as a landlord, we're always, we get some backlash because we raise rents and people say that we're like bad people because we raise rents. What are your thoughts on when it comes to, you know, Christianity, being a landlord? What are your thoughts as far as like, how do you see yourself when you're still doing the will of God, but you're a landlord? How do you see that? I'm not sure if that's the right way to ask that question, but
yeah.
Where do you see that? Like, how do you see yourself being a landlord and still being a good Christian?
I look at it the same way as I look at anything else. Like, how do you see yourself as an athlete mm-hmm. when you're playing sports and still being a Christian? How do you see yourself as a dad? How do you see yourself? Like, my faith supersedes anything else I do. Mm-hmm. So as a landlord, I'm going to always try to use my faith first when dealing with people. Now, my faith doesn't say I have to let people take advantage of me indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
It says to go the extra mile for people, right? And then it says a mile. It doesn't say 500 miles, yeah. right? And I know a mile seems like a long way, mm-hmm. but what I take that to mean is like, and it talks about like treating others the way you want to be treated, loving people first. Like, I have, because of where I invested, I've never had to evict someone.
Mm.
And that's probably because the people I could have evicted, I tried to work with them and help them get themselves into a better situation.
Mm.
And it wasn't because I think evicting people is morally wrong. It was because I want to always err on the side of compassion if I can, right?
Mm-hmm.
And don't mishear me here. I'm not saying you can't evict people. There are certain people, if they're camping in your property and they refuse to leave and they refuse to pay, you have to evict them.
Yeah.
But the properties that we owned and the tenants that we were attracted to those properties based on the price point and where they were typically always trying to help themselves. And so we were willing to help them. So like we only had one tenant during COVID, believe it or not, all those rental properties, we only had one tenant that had problems paying. And she was working at a hair salon. They had closed her hair salon because they were told to close it. And she said, I can't go to work. So we said, that's fine. We'll work with you. And this is before all the legislation came out about what you had to do.
Yeah.
We said, we'll work with you, you know? And she said, I can get you the money, but it's going to be next month. So we let her pay the next month. We didn't charge any late fees.
Mm.
And we've always tried to do that stuff. I mean, I've had people that checked out of a property, never paid their last payment, left all their junk in the property, and wanted me to take their deposit as the last payment. Like, just taking advantage of me.
Yeah.
You're going to get that when you do this stuff. I kind of think it's just like in vacation rental investing. You own a vacation rental, you're going to get some guests that check in and they complain about everything.
Mm.
They complain the whole time and they complain to get money back. They know that if they complain enough about enough things and they hold your review with their leverage saying, I'm going to leave you a bad review unless you cut me a check. They know that you will.
Yeah.
That's just part of being a short-term rental investor. It's the same with long-term rental investing. Like you're going to get somebody that has something bad happen in their life and or have made bad choices or are irresponsible or whatever it is or have mental health problems. We've had that as well. And you're just going to have to deal with it, man. That's part of it. But you will become a millionaire in the process. So I always try to remember, this person stiffed me here, but you know what? If I keep going, I'm still going to become a millionaire in spite of all this.
Yeah.
So it's like, at the end of the day, and also in the Bible, it says the same measure that you give to others will be measured to you.
Yep.
So always think, what if I'm that person and God is measuring me and I need help? And we all know, like Jesus, we got grace, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always like, man, I've been given so much grace. I need to be graceful with others as well. So I think like you don't let people ruin your business and walk all over you, but you also give them some grace.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of real estate investors that say no grace, never, ever. Toss them out on the street. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And I don't view it that way.
Right.
So I'd love to know your thoughts on it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first thing, in your situation, like when you're in a situation like that, same thing with my tenants.
Yeah.
The only thing I tell my tenants, if you can't make the payment, just let me know. Communicate with me.
Yeah.
Tell me what's going on.
Yeah.
And I'm the same way. I mean, I'll give you an example. About 2 months ago, I think it was, we got hit by a windstorm here in North Alabama.
Right.
One of my properties, a tree fell, and it damaged part of the property. And then, it took out the electricity. It ran through some cables and the electricity was out. So my tenants, they had to go stay in the motel, until we get the power back. And the electric company, it took them about a week and a half to get power to the house. But the tree was in the way, so they can still move in. So it was about almost 2 weeks until they could move back in the property. So within that time, they were paying motel rent, I guess you could call it. It equal to about a month and a half of total. It's a duplex total, month and a half. So insurance, I have insurance and they covered a portion of it, not the whole thing. So in my head, I'm like thinking like, okay, the insurance didn't give me what I lost in rent And I gave that back to the tenants because they were the one that paid for the motel. However, there was still about $300 that that they paid for motel that the insurance didn't give me. So I was like, okay, you know, what would Jesus do in this case? Should I, you know, not pay them the $300, or should I just, you know, call it a day?
Yeah.
And in my case, I'm like, you know what? Those people, they pay for that money. And it's probably money that they weren't, that they didn't expect to spend. So what I did, I deducted for the monthly payment, I deducted the $300. So basically, for that unit, I didn't cash flow at all for that month. And, you know, stuff happens. Right. So that's one thing. Like you said, I mean, these are human beings. What if it's you in that situation? So, like, that's for the stuff, day-to-day stuff that comes up. Now, when you are, as a landlord, you have a lot of control over your rent. So not entirely all the control, but you have some control over rent. We as landlords could take advantage of people easily. However, it's what's just. You have to do what's just. So like when we raise rents, I go by whatever the market rent is.
Sure.
According to the square footage of the house and the amenities and whatnot.
Yeah.
I try to never take advantage of people. You know, I raised their, and the reason why rent raised, number one, is for the most part, recently it was inflation.
Right.
Stuff goes up for everybody. And the market rent went up, so I go up by that same amount, whatever that is. Same thing. If rents go down, I go down. I haven't had that happen, but when it does happen, I mean, as a rightful landlord, you should bring the rents down as well. Not take advantage of people.
Right.
But normally we haven't seen rents go down in a while.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think I don't have any check in my moral ethics code about raising rents on people. As long as it's market, right? And I think you find a market equilibrium by whether or not the people want to stay, right? Like in theory, like if market rents are 1100 and they're in there at 900, and you tell them, I got to raise it to 1100. They're like, $200 a month. But then they go look and they're like, well, everything else is 1100 too. And I got to move. So I would rather just stay. I mean, we had this happen. We bought a duplex. The lady in one side, and this owner hadn't raised rents in like 25 years. Mm. And so market rents were like 1200 and she had them in there at 650 or something.
Wow.
So we were, you know, and one unit was vacant and the other had this lady. And we said, we're going to give you two choices. You've been here for a long time. We'd love for you to stay, but rents are way under market. Mm-hmm. We're going to adjust your rents to, I think, $850, and you can stay, or we're going to renovate your unit, and we're going to adjust them to market because the unit needed updating. And she said the same thing. Oh, rents are going up, and, you know. Then she went and looked around, and she said, oh, well, what you just offered me, the first option is way below what I can find anywhere else. So she stayed at that. And then 6 months later, she left because there was some other stuff going on. Mm-hmm. But we tried to work with her, you know. Yeah. And then we got both units renovated and got market rents just like we thought. And we sold that and made a good profit on that property. But, you know, we always try to err on the side of, like, taking care of our tenants.
Yeah.
And we want them to take care of us, too. Like, that's the thing. If you treat your tenants well, I think it comes back to you. You know, it's call it karma, call it God's blessing. I believe it's God's blessing, you know, but I believe if you treat people in a way that you shouldn't be treating them, it will come back to you as well. Mm-hmm. And I think doing the right thing is never going to put you in the wrong place. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. I mean, that's a really good take. I mean, overall, I mean, for any landlords listening, just do what Jesus would do, really.
Exactly.
That's really what it comes out to.
Exactly. Let's talk about making content.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So it's been a trip putting all this stuff together. I mean, we're trying a lot of different things. We're building our team. Our team's doing a great job. They're learning. Mm-hmm. We're learning how to do this. We're toying around with possibly getting a studio, like setting a studio up. But I mean, I really believe if we can get our content dialed in and we can scale it and focus on the quality as well as putting stuff out on a regular basis, that it will really grow our business and our podcast.
Yep.
And you know, we just got our stuff on YouTube. The Daily Real Estate Investor podcast was around for a couple of years before Tony came on, before you joined me.
Mm-hmm.
But so the audio side has got some traction. the video side is just growing. So if you guys are watching this and you're not subscribed,
go to YouTube.
Hit the like and subscribe button, because we would love to get this thing growing. Yeah. But I'm really excited about it. I honestly really enjoy the content stuff.
Me too.
I think I enjoy it because it's a challenge that I have not overcome yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like on the real estate stuff, I've gotten some traction there and had some wins. And I feel like on this, I'm still the guy in little leagues, like with the bat that's striking out, you know? And I feel like I've gotten some hits here and there, but I feel like I still haven't conquered it, you know? And like, it's a challenge. And I've heard Gary Vee talk about that. They're like, what if you lost everything and you had to start over? He's like, man, I'd be excited because it's a challenge, and I like challenges. I feel the same way about content. Like, yeah. I know I can, with enough practice, get really good at this, I believe, with God's blessing, and I don't feel like I'm there yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. And that's in the last three, ever since COVID, competition, or not competition necessarily, but the crowd of creators,
yeah,
have been, you know, there's a lot of creators now versus what they were back
for
in
sure.
2020. So there's a lot more screen time that people can play around with and what they like. So we're in 2023 and we're trying to start this or get some traction on the YouTube side.
Yeah.
There's definitely more challenges than there were a couple years ago.
Definitely.
But like you said, I mean, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure we can overcome it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, really, that's one challenge. On the other side of the challenge is that we don't want to edit any of this stuff.
Right.
Because I think our time could be best utilized doing what we're doing now.
And we've done the editing.
Oh, dude, I hate it.
I've done my own podcast audio editing since I started it. And I hired somebody, and I was paying a decent amount of money for them to do it. And I was like, man, I could just do this myself. I mean, and I figured it out. It didn't take me that much time, but saved all that money. So I think really one of the challenges when you're doing this is how not to break the bank, spending all your money doing this before you have enough time to actually be getting a return on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting a good return on the content thing with all of my vacation rental clients. Because as a broker in the Smokies, like, I have people come to me wanting to buy stuff. I've already sold a cabin. I've got multiple clients about to buy more. And I probably got 30 clients right now looking. Wow. So I got a lot. So and that's translating into cash. That's definitely a return on the social media thing.
Yeah.
But as we try to get into multifamily, social media is going to be huge, man.
Yeah.
Because multifamily investors, they want to know you. You get to know people through content. And I think this is the right step in that direction.
Yeah.
So
one of the reasons why I started content creating is to get private lenders to know who I am.
Yeah.
Really. Because I wasn't doing any, I mean, the only social media I did was personal stuff.
Yeah.
But I was like, man, I need to get my name out there. I need to people that, for me to have access to money. Part of it is telling people what to do. And I think I actually learned that from Matt Faircloth's book.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why I started content editing and creating. And I remember I recorded a piece of content and then I downloaded the app called CapCut at the time. And I was editing everything myself.
Hmm.
And dude, that is time consuming.
It is.
It was draining me. And I was like, man, I remember this is kind of funny. When I took my bathroom breaks, that's when I edited content, because I was in there for a couple minutes. You know, that was when I was editing content. And but I was like, man, this is taking forever. I mean, the recording part is easy because you can record within 3 minutes, but then clipping audio, adding some music if you're gonna add some music to it, adding the captions, that was taking up a lot of time. So I know it was a challenge for you too. And then at the same time, we're not the best people at that anyway. So we, Josiah and I have teamed up with our content creating, and we hired several awesome VAs.
Uh-huh.
Shout out to Sheena, Charmaine, and Joreen. They're killing it right
now. Thank you. Thank you all.
But they're doing a great job right now at editing our content. But it's been a learning curve too, because I know there's been some really good content that we put out there we think is going to be a big hit. And then it's kind of disappointing when you don't see it, explode as you expected it to.
Yes.
But you sent me a post the other day. It was like, when you think nobody's watching your content, keep going, keep doing it.
Yes.
Because eventually one of them is going to blow up. And when that one blows up, that same person that saw it might be like, oh man, these guys are actually got some good content, and they're going to scroll through all the content that we created in the past, and then our previous clips are going to blow up. So
yep.
So yeah, I mean, we're not just to I mean, the purpose of this is to educate. The purpose of this is to eventually get our multifamily investors to invest with us. And at the same time, it's just to provide people with personal knowledge, real estate knowledge, business knowledge, whatever we can give out. Because I mean,
share the journey.
Share the journey. And yeah. a lot of the information I've got with real estate has been close to free. Because a lot of the stuff I learned has been in conferences and books that I read. So if I could get something for free or close to free,
yeah,
why not share it with everybody? So
yeah, and I mean, YouTube and Spotify, Apple Podcast, man, that stuff has opened up the world of learning.
Mm-hmm.
When I want to learn something, I mean, when I've got an hour of free time, I don't turn on cable. I turn on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I get on and I'll watch stuff so I can learn about stuff. And I mean, if you want to be a successful real estate investor, find some podcasts and find some YouTube channels that talk about it. And you get to take a free ride with those people. Mm-hmm. Does not cost you a dime.
Yeah.
And I mean, think about how much you have to pay to go to college, and you can't even find a real estate course.
Oh yeah.
That's going to give you that kind of training.
Nope.
Doesn't exist. I mean, I took all the real estate classes I could find in college, and all it was learning definitions of things and reading a little case study here and there. But when you track with people daily, yeah, and they have daily content and daily stories, and you're spending hours in, you know, listening to what they're doing with their business, listening to what they've been through, tips, they're teaching you things. You learn how to save money. You learn how to make money. It's like going to college for free. It's better than going to college for
exactly.
free.
Exactly.
And so like, it just opened up the world of learning for me. And I hope it does the same thing for other people. And also, one reason I'm doing the content thing is to become a better person. Like, it takes discipline, and it also takes courage to sit and put yourself out there constantly and sometimes not get any feedback. Sometimes you make a video, like you're saying, you're like, man, I think this was a good one. And you put it out there and it gets almost nothing.
Two views.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, what? What is going on with this? And then and then sometimes you put, like, I put one out on a TikTok and it had 140,000 views or something. It's like something random, you know? And I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get why that one did so well and these others aren't doing anything. But it's like, I go back to Gary Vee. He's kind of my North Star with stuff like this because he's so positive. And he says, like, if you don't do it for the cheers, then you won't hear the boos. It's
sure.
So it's like, or you won't hear the silence, you know? You won't pay attention to the silence. It's more of, if we're not doing this for others, if we're doing this to the glory of God, and we're doing this because it's something we got to do,
mm-hmm,
when it's not getting a lot of support, or when it gets a ton of support, we're the same people.
Yeah.
You know? So we wanted to get a ton of support, but we're not going to stop because it's slow growing right now on YouTube. And everybody starts from zero.
Yeah.
Everybody's at first trying to get one follower, one like, one subscriber. You know, that's how it starts for everybody. So, and Gary Vee talks about, he spent, it's like, years at Wine Library. Years at Wine Library doing videos on wine and nobody watching.
Nobody, yep.
And that dude has got people standing in line paying money just to shake his hand now. And he is proof, and so is Mr. Beast.
Yeah.
Mr. Beast said he started off, he couldn't get anybody to watch any of his stuff, and they made videos on everything. Everything. Look at the guy now.
Yeah.
He puts a video up, it's got 90 million views or something crazy. You know, it's like, so we know what it takes. It takes persistence. It takes, you know, and you'll get, Mr. B said, try to get 1% better on every video you do. So I look at some of the first stuff that I did and I'm like, I feel like I'm getting a little better.
Yeah.
But I also look at my current stuff and I'm like, man, I could get a lot better. Yeah. You know, that's kind of where I feel like we are.
Yeah. And we'll get there, man. We'll get there.
We will.
And this is just, and this is another thing too. We motivate each other.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, some days I'm like, oh man, this was a horrible video, but like, or horrible performance. But we encourage each other to just keep on going. That's important too, to find a partner or somebody that motivates you.
Absolutely.
We'll get there, dude.
Yeah. Man, I appreciate you and all the work you're doing on this.
Yeah, man, you too. I mean, likewise, yeah. We're in this together.
So. Absolutely. Absolutely.
If you are listening to this, either Spotify, Apple Podcasts, be sure to go subscribe on YouTube, Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast.
Do it.
And vice versa. If you're watching this on YouTube, please go to our audio platforms and subscribe. That's the way we grow. Share it with people that you think will get some value out of it. Josiah, what's your Instagram feed?
It's at Daily Real Estate Investor.
So follow Josiah. He puts out content daily, I believe. And me, likewise, I put out content daily. So
yep.
I'm at ANT1234 Moreno. So, but yeah, man, it was good chatting with you today.
I was just thinking about the ABC. It's like, easy as ABC, ANT. One, two, three. It's got a four of those.
You know how friends make fun of me? Because
oh, do they really?
Yeah, they say like, why did you stop at four? Is that how much you can count when you were learning English or something?
That's great. But, 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, there's probably an ANT 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out there.
Yeah, honestly, I've always thought like somebody, if I ever make it to like a lot of followers,
yeah,
somebody's going to make a ANT 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh, yeah, you know it.
Yeah.
You know it, man. You know it. Yeah, there was a at Daily Real Estate Investor, you know.
They were trying to
they had a U in the end or something, you know. Like,
I haven't.
It's kind of phony.
I haven't found the need to put a check mark next to my name.
Yeah, I did it because I was getting a lot of fake accounts copying mine. So. Yeah, that's why I did that. But
I haven't found a need for it yet.
Yeah.
Until
it's coming. It's coming. Just wait till they copy pictures of you and your wife under a different name. Oh, then you'll get one. I just don't want people getting scammed thinking it's me asking for money or something, you know.
That'll be bad.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway. Thank you guys for tuning in.
Yep. Appreciate it.
See you guys on the next episode.
Next time.
Peace.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please connect with me on Instagram at Daily Real Estate Investor or via email at josiahsmelser@gmail.com. My new book titled Dream It and Build It, How to Crush Your Real Estate Investing Goals is out. You can get it either in digital or physical format on Amazon. Once you've read the book, please leave me a review. Tune in next time for another episode of the Daily Real Estate Investor as we both join in our financial freedom journey.